Parashat Truma opens with a divine request. God asks the children of Israel for a contribution to achieve a specific goal. And the verses tell us as follows, "And let them make me a sanctuary, that I may dwell among them." The entire parasha, along with its layers of midrash, serves as a blueprint for how God seeks to be together with us and how we can be together with others. This is so even in an encounter that might otherwise seem impossible. At the start of chapter 25, God issues a thesis statement. The sanctuary is the means, and perhaps the act of building is the very condition, for the divine presence to reside within the community. This request is accompanied by a demand for absolute precision. Exactly as I show you the blueprint, Tavnit, of the Mishkan, so shall you make it. From there, the chapter continues with the command to make three vessels, the ark, the table, and the menorah. The verses that conclude the chapter once again emphasize, see well and follow their blueprints, Tavnitam, that are being shown to you on the mountain. Why this repetitive insistence on seeing the blueprint? What did Moshe actually see? The Babylonian Talmud offers two striking visions. It was taught, tells us the Talmud. Rabbi Yossi ben Rabbi Yehoshua says, an ark of fire, a table of fire, and a menorah of fire descended from the heaven, and Moshe saw them and reproduced them. As it says, note well and follow the blueprints for them that are being shown to you on the mountain. Rabbi Yossi ben Rabbi Yehoshua suggests that an ark, table, and menorah of fire descended from the heaven. Moshe saw these fiery archetypes and reproduced them in the physical world. Rabbi Yochanan offers a different picture. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba said that Rabbi Yochanan said, the angel Gabriel was wearing a kind of craftsman's belt, and he showed Moshe the construction of the menorah. Whether through celestial fire or a laborer's belt, according to the narrative sequence that these midrashim assume, God first gives a general guideline, make me a sanctuary, and then follows it up by ensuring Moshe sees the actual blueprints. Why does God guide Moshe in such exact detail? One way to view these instructions is as a guide for the unique relationship between the infinite and the finite. God, who is one and beyond compare, asks for proximity and connection that people will not experience in any other relationship. And so drawing close requires a level of care and precision unlike any other relationship. The word tavnit, blueprint, highlights the fundamental challenge of the Mishkan and its role in the relationship with God. This challenge is connected to the danger within tavnit. In Deuteronomy, the Torah warns, "For your own sake, be most careful, since you saw no tavnit, no shape, no tmuna, when God spoke to you. Be most careful not to act wickedly and make for yourselves a tavnit." There is a profound tension here. One tavnit is part of a commandment. The other is forbidden as wickedness. On the one hand, there is the form that Israel is required to follow in the context of the Mishkan, the very form that God shows Moshe in our parasha. On the other hand, there is the prohibited form that appears in the book of Deuteronomy. There, the tavnit form constitutes corruption, and one must beware of it, because it is not part of what Israel saw at Chorev. In our attempt to draw close to God and respond to the call of, let them make me a sanctuary and I will dwell among them, we encounter a fundamental difficulty bound up with the passage from the abstract to the material. This transition takes place before us in the verses and in the Midrash on two levels. First, from the fiery pattern to the wooden and golden vessels, and second, from the abstract divine being to the Mishkan, which possesses a defined and bounded form and substance. It seems that the Midrashim are highly attuned to the repeated use of the word blueprint, tavnit, in the verses, because this repetition holds the tension and the complexity at the very heart of the Mishkan. A God without form and without image asks for a sanctuary in which to dwell. The divine request for a Mishkan carries with it the claim that it is possible for God to have a presence within a human-structured, tangible, physical, and defined space. A second approach is to view the Mishkan as a model for human connections as well. If we seek to walk in God's ways, the Mishkan teaches us how to dwell with one another. At first glance, God's rigid blueprints seem to leave no room for human creativity. The text suggests that for true intimacy to exist, there must be an act of deep listening and implementation of the other's needs. For a person to feel truly at home with another, their shared space must respect the blueprints of their specific will and vulnerabilities, must demonstrate attentive care. The request to dwell together is an act of vulnerability. Trust is built when we respond precisely to what the other person actually asks for, rather than what we imagine they want. Moshe's attentiveness to the tavnit God asks for teaches that through careful listening, distrust may be transformed into trust. The Mishkan provides a defined yet non-confining space for meeting. It offers a structured response to the vulnerability of the one who asks, make me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them. By following the blueprint, we can create the possibility of connections between us and others, even God, connections that might otherwise feel beyond our reach. Shabbat Shalom.